Next up, we have Patrice McCarron, who's the Executive Director of the Maine Lobstermen's Association.
Okay. Hello, everybody. I'm Patrice McCarron. I am the Executive Director of the Maine Lobstermen's Association. I've been with the MLA for, I think, 21 years, which is truly hard to believe. So nice to be back on the committee. Nice to see everybody and nice to see some new faces. I'm looking forward to working with everybody. So I'm going to start with a little bit about the association, give you a sense of who we are and the type of work we do here in the state of Maine. Going to talk a little bit about the lobster industry itself, and I unfortunately was late logging on. It sounds like Marion LaCroix may have covered some of this, so just look incredibly bored or give me the cut sign if you've already heard it. And then we will move into discussing some of the issues that we're facing. And I have to say, in 21 years, these last few years, I could never have imagined that our industry would be facing the sort of existential threats that we are facing now. It's a lot. So anyway, down to the basics. The MLA, our mission is simple. We advocate for a sustainable lobster resource in the fishermen and the communities that depend on it. So it ends up being a very broad mission because lobster is the economic backbone of our coastal communities, and so many marine working waterfront coastal issues actually impact the lobster industry. So we find ourselves working on a lot. The MLA itself, we are the oldest and largest fishing industry association in the country. We were established back in 1954, so we have a lot of history. We have a lot of institutional knowledge. We've been with these issues since, honestly, the birth of a lot of these issues. And we see them come up over and over again. And I feel really blessed to be part of the MLA and work with our members and our board who have really seen a lot through some of them for more than 60 years. And they're still volunteering their time. The MLA itself, we're a representative organization, as you are as well, in the legislature. Our board of directors is elected for service by our members. We're capped at 21 board members. You have to be a licensed Maine commercial lobsterman to serve on the board of the MLA. I, as staff, have really no status beyond any power the board chooses to give me, because all of the power in the MLA lies with that commercial license. That's how we're organized. And it does make it difficult to run this organization at times. We're well represented by lobstermen all the way the length of the coast. We're really not more represented in any single region. You know, the perception, if you live down east, you might think, oh, you know, they represent the Southern Maine guys. The Southern Maine guys think we represent the down east guys. But we represent probably 20% of people along all areas of the coast. And the focus of our organization is not to get into the nitty gritty stuff, you know, harbor to harbor, individual fishermen stuff. We really try to look on the big picture. We look at, what do we need to do to keep this fishery thriving for the future, to make sure that this generation can hand the fishery off to the next generation? We do have a system of zone councils in place, and so that's where a lot of that more local and regional conversation can happen. So like Sebastian, you'll often see me in front of the committee, but I am here on behalf of our members and our board. I don't come forward with any positions that the board hasn't taken. So currently the MLA has 20 board members. We're a pretty diverse group of people. We're very well represented both geographically, and over the last probably 5 to 8 years, we've really seen a lot of younger members of the industry step up and into leadership roles with the MLA, which has been really fantastic. The older guys stick around. They really feel it's their duty, but they understand that the fishery's changing, and they've made their living. They've raised their kids. They've paid for their things, and it's this next generation coming up who we really have to preserve and make sure this industry functions for. Our members do serve a 3-year term on the board. There are no term limits. They can be reelected, and it's the board itself who elects our officers, and currently Kristen Porter from Cutler serves as MLA's president. So you name it, we've been involved with it. Our work did begin back in the 50s. That was a time where people came together to form the MLA because they were concerned about price. So I guess not much ever really changes in the lobster fishery because people are still concerned about price, although less so given everything else that we're facing. So the 50s, we were actually convicted of price fixing. Our members organized a tie-up. We were dragged into federal court. The MLA lost. And so there's a really interesting history chapter there. Through the 70s, really taxes were the focus of the organization. So all of the programs that support the industry in terms of self-employment taxes, exemptions for sternmen from payroll taxes, some of the sales tax exemptions, all that went through with MLAs nudging in the 70s. The 1980s is really when managing the lobster resource came to the fore. We actually battled in the state legislature over maintaining our maximum gauge size. Our dealers in the lobster industry wanted to dispense of that in the 80s, and we were able to keep that in place and have solidified some of our core measures, like our 3.5 inches, and really went to battle with the feds over our V-notching regulations. In the 90s, we worked to move federal management of the lobster resource to the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. At that time, it was with the New England Fishery Management Council. And moving it to ASMFC really gave the states a much bigger voice in coordinating amongst each other and making sure that the state really holds the power in terms of overseeing this, because we really are a coastal fishery. The 2000s and into the 2010s, it's been whales, whales, whales. A lot of bait issues, issues with herring stock, resource allocation. And it's just really gotten more intense in the last 10 years. And we would add wind to that list now. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. So the lion's share of the work that we do is advocacy work on behalf of our members in the lobster community. The big issues now are whales, wind, coexisting with aquaculture, preserving working waterfronts, things like that. Lobster management through the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission is always something that we're monitoring. We're not overfished. Overfishing is not occurring, so there hasn't been a lot of action there. And then certainly we always have a presence with this committee and the legislature. We do programs as well. We do a lot of education, and you'll see a copy of our monthly newspaper. It's actually published by 501c3, which is MLA's sister organization, the Maine Lobstermen's Community Alliance. And we will make sure that members of the committee receive that. It's also available through the Alliance website. And we've done leadership program, recruited a lot of the younger people in the fishery, done some exchange programs with Canada, teach them about policy and economics and in the management of the fishery. I worked on lobster quality. We've done some business programs. So, you know, depending on what the needs of the industry are, we will do specialized programs for the industry. The fishery itself, we're big. There's almost 5,000 commercial license holders. That's 2018 data. I think if anything, it's probably getting a little bit smaller. The state estimates about 70% of those licenses are actually fished. So we do have some latency. And then we have over 1,000 students in this fishery. And that's a very important component. A lot of people pay for their education, put themselves through college with this fishery, and then they may or may not continue onto the commercial side. We are primarily a day trip fishery. We have local fishing territories. You know, our vessels are typically under 50 feet. So in terms of, you know, fisheries nationwide or fisheries internationally, we really are a local based small boat fleet. Collectively, we're a $1 billion industry. We represent three quarters of the value of all fisheries landed in Maine. So, you know, there is a lot of concern about the future of the lobster fishery, and any downturn that we could experience could certainly have significant impacts on the economic well-being of families and our entire coastal economy. Collectively with Shoreside, we're employing well over 10,000 people. And it's important to understand that this fishery is owner-operated. To be a lobsterman, you have to own your boat. Your license and your traps are basically tied to that vessel. So we don't have people running a corporation and hiring somebody to run the vessel. So there's a lot of stewardship and conservation wrapped into that. It also means that the fishery is local. We don't have corporate headquarters out in California where our profits are migrating to. It stays local, and that is why we're so successful supporting our communities. I know you've seen the landings up. We've landed over 100 million pounds since 2011, over $400 million, I can't see my slide, since 2014. And we've been valued at greater than $500 million for two separate years. So it's hard to conceive how big of a deal it is to be over 100 billion pounds for so many years. I mean, that just seemed unreachable. As I came through, I remember the first year we reached, you know, 65 million pounds, and people would say, can you believe it? And then 70 million pounds, and it just kept going. So the fishery's been tremendous. We are separated into state waters. So this purple line here is a state waters fishery, which is essentially the jurisdiction of the state itself. And about 20% of our harvesters also hold a federal permit, and they're able to fish out here about 40 miles from shore. So those are sort of the big full-time people, more likely to be fishing year-round, whereas our state waters only people are more likely to be, you know, like a May through November fishermen. But there certainly are people who are fishing through the winter in state waters. We are divided into seven lobster management zones, Zone A in the east, Zone G in the west, and our landings are 100 plus million pounds. Divide, you know, certainly weighted the majority of the landings to the east, Washington County coming in at 22%. Zone C, the Stonington area, our largest county at 24%. And then you can see in southern Maine, the western part of the state only accounting for 4% of the landings, Casco Bay, 11%. There are a significant number of fishermen here. So the lobster fishery, it's not, it is not equal for all participants. This boom in the Downeast fishery has really been something. So along with the seven zone councils, it's important to understand that if you are a Zone D fisherman, half of your gear has to be fished in that zone. You're able to take 49% into other zones. The zones as managers are able to limit entry into the fishery. They're able to have a more restrictive trap limit than the state, and Zone E does that at 600 traps. And they can also regulate the amount of traps that they fish per buoy line. Through limited entry, they've created essentially a waiting list in every zone, except for Zone C is at 1-to-1. So if there's a waiting list, it would be pretty tiny, but that's certainly something that sitting members of the Marine Resources Committee are very familiar with. And we also have a student license provision, and a student can enter the fishery if they complete the apprentice program, which is a full minimum 2 years in the program. You have to complete a minimum of 1,000 hours, and there are other provisions. This committee has upped the age of that program to 23 to allow people to remain a student through their college years. And, you know, just want to emphasize again, we are an owner-operator fishery. We've never gone to quotas or anything that would consolidate ownership of this fishery. And that's really been an essential component of our success and our ability to sustain that rural economy. And the other piece of that is we've never allowed for the sale or transfer of licenses. If a license is retired, it goes back to the state and they reassign it at cost to somebody entering the fishery. What that's done is it's made the cost of entry very minimal. You can still work your way into this fishery. It's not like Canada. You don't need to have $1 million to buy a boat gear license to get yourself up and running. And it's really allowed us to continue to hand this fishery off to the next generation. And so this is just an overview for those who aren't familiar with our lobster fishery. These are our core conservation measures. These are our stewardship practices and the reason why our landings have gone through the roof. Certainly environment's been helpful, but had we not been having these fundamental conservation practices, our fishery would not be performing. And that's actually been documented in the literature. They looked at Southern New England, which had a temperature impact and had their stock collapse versus the Gulf of Maine. And they said point blank that had they been practicing the same conservation measures as Maine, their stock wouldn't have collapsed. It would have shrunk, but they wouldn't be in the dire straits that they're in now. So this has been huge, and the committee's been tremendous in supporting and ensuring that none of these measures are ever rolled back. So to wrap up, the priorities that we're looking at coming this year are very much to do with the protection of large whales and right whales in particular. We've got several federal actions that are literally crushing us right now. We're in the process of reviewing proposed rules. Those come to us courtesy of the Marine Mammal Protection Act. They need to be finalized essentially by May of 2021, and implementation will probably be rolled out, you know, 3 to 6 months behind that. We're also reviewing a biological opinion, and that is something that's done under the Endangered Species Act, and the federal government has to say, does permitting the lobster fishery hinder the recovery of North Atlantic right whales? If it does, our fishery can be shut down. And so the biological opinion has essentially said that if this round of proposed whale rules are implemented, we will not impede the recovery of right whales and we can continue to operate. But they put a frightening 10-year framework around that. And so within 5 years, we're really gonna be up against it. And it's extraordinarily concerning. We monitor the right whale stock assessments, the categorization of our fishery through the list of fisheries under the Marine Mammal Protection Act. So just so that you know, there's a lot of other policy and science work that goes into that at the federal level. The environmental community has dragged the National Marine Fisheries Service into court, as well as the Maine Department of Marine Resources. There are two pending cases, one in DC District Court, that is the big one, which is demanding that the biological opinion and proposed rules be resolved by May of 2021, lest we be shut down. And there's a second case in Bangor District Court in Maine against the DMR and National Marine Fisheries Service, and that case is on hold until the federal case in DC District Court is resolved, and we are all keeping our fingers crossed that that is dismissed upon the implementation of those rules. There's also another notice of intent to sue National Marine Fisheries Service from another group of environmental people, and there's a pending court case in Massachusetts, which is truly one to watch. It is requiring their state waters lobster fishery to get an incidental take permit through the Endangered Species Act in order to continue to operate their state waters fishery. And we can all just pray to God that we do not have to get an incidental take permit. It is extraordinarily difficult to achieve, and it is actually new to commercial fisheries. So it's really just the crab fisheries on the West Coast are in the process, and then second in line is the mass fishery. But other than that, there's really no precedent for that. So it's an uphill battle. The MLA has formed a legal defense fund. We've had to bring on a legal team. The amount of policy work involved in this is truly staggering. There's a lot of science behind it as well. And then we've just inherited the realization of what offshore wind development is going to mean for our fisheries with the governor's announcement of the 16 square mile proposed research array. We have joined with the other fishing industry groups in Maine. We've asked for some additional time. She was looking at trying to get that application resolved within a few months, and that is very concerning. We've also identified the need for the state of Maine to do a thorough review of its offshore wind statutes and regulations. There was talk of wind developer Trident proposing a development for an array of windmills in state waters, and nobody can really give voice to what that process would look like for Maine. And so it's important that we know that our statutes protect our fishing industry and the values of our working waterfront and the spirit of what renewable energy is going to mean for Maine. That those statutes actually accomplish that, and that we have the correlating regulations in place to see that through. And then finally, COVID, you know, like everybody, it's been huge for us. It gives us constant worry about the stability of the market. We are extraordinarily grateful that we've had the Maine Lobster Market and Collaborative. They were able to do a significant pivot and help the dealers get into the retail sector. I'll also put a plug in for the Marketing Collaborative. They've been tremendous in supporting industry communications around the right whale issue. They're prepared to help us educate the public on the importance of commercial fishing as we look at the trade-offs with offshore wind. They help us decide which media to speak to and which media are really out there just to get us. The resource is invaluable, and I can't imagine trying to do this job without their support. The MLA has also been involved in education and advocacy to make sure that some of those COVID relief programs are structured as well as they can be to support our industry. We're pretty unique being nearly 5,000 individual small businesses. So with that, I will leave it for questions.
Thanks so much, Patrice. I think it would be fair to say that Patrice, like Sebastian, is available.
Yes.
We'll see, as Patrice said, we'll see her, and as Sebastian said, see him and others at our hearings, our public hearings and work sessions. And as a lot of you know, but new people may not, you can ask for more, at a public hearing, you can ask for more information for the work session, and the follow through is great. So we have, I see one question so far, Representative Thorne.
Again, I try to ask some quick questions, but they burn on my mind that I wrote down. Patrice, you had mentioned that the lobster harvest over the last few years were over 100 million pounds. Did I hear that right?
Correct.
Per year? Okay. And you had talked about the sustainable measures that you take, the V-notch and the females and releasing the ones with the berries and the over 5-inch, how's that pronounced? Capice?
Carapace.
Carapace, okay. all kinds of new words I'm learning, diadromous and all that stuff. But I used to call them just sea run salmon. But how do you feel is that sustainable to continue like that? Is the industry secure with saying, you know, we can maintain this 100 million pound harvest and not impact the population of the lobster? Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it's really two separate issues. Nobody can say for sure that we can sustain 100 million pounds, and any betting person would say that's probably not realistic. It's so far outside of the historic average. It's really difficult to predict what the future holds, and it's one of the unnerving parts of working in the lobster industry. We really don't know what Mother Nature is going to allow. But we can say for certain that the measures that we have in place, they protect the life history of the lobster. So we don't harvest a lobster until enough are getting through the sexual maturity. We put the oversized back because the fecundity, the amount of offspring they can produce, is exponentially more than their smaller counterparts. We don't allow dragging for lobsters. So when we have undersized lobsters in our traps or oversized lobsters in our traps, that bycatch is released back to the ocean alive. And those lobsters can be caught or not caught. So the science has really proven, it was really fishermen for years and years and years pushing for these conservation practices to remain in place, but there's now scientific evidence showing how well the V-notch supports the industry, how these measures collectively. So we don't have quotas. That used to be very controversial. You have to control what you take out of the ocean to ensure its sustainability. But we've proven that you actually can measure around the biology of the creature successfully and allow more players to have access to those landings. And I feel, Mother Nature aside, you know, very secure that if something happens to the fishery, it will be environmental and not because of overfishing pressure.
Thank you.
Sure.